Welcome to the Closing Market Report. It's March the 19th, 2007. I'm Todd Gleason, back from India. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel of Grain Field Marketing out of Normal, Illinois. And later in the half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with the folks at the Andersons right here in Champaign County. In agricultural news, the Des Moines Register is reporting switchgrass is not a good economic alternative feedstock for ethanol production. The U.S. Senate has approved a budget blueprint that calls for $1.6 billion in spending at the DOE's renewable energy program. And U.S. officials are meeting in Seoul, South Korea today to work out a free trade deal and greater market access for U.S. beef products. Dave Dickey will have details of these stories later in the half hour. And then we'll hear how Darrell Good views the export market for the state of Illinois. It's pretty likely corn will ship west to Iowa to meet that state's ethanol demand. Hey, and don't forget that just after the bottom of the hour, we'll check in with the folks at Chesapeake Energy to discuss the global agricultural weather forecast. It all happens right here on this Monday edition of AM 580's Closing Market Report.
Hi, this is AM 580 Agricultural Director Dave Dickey. Join us this evening at the Tri-County High School in Walcott, Indiana, for another one of our free AM 580 Agricultural Outlook panels. Tonight's meeting gets underway at 6:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. That's 5:30 Central. Panelists for the meeting include Kurt Kimmel of Grainfield Commodities, Chris Hurt, Purdue University Agricultural Economist, and Chuck Shelby of Risk Management Commodities. That's at the Tri-County High School in Walcott, Indiana, this evening at 6:30 Eastern Standard Time. No advance registration is required, and once again, the meeting is free. We hope to see you there.
The Carle Center for Rural Health and Farm Safety, a division of Carle Foundation Hospital, is proud to underwrite agricultural programming at WILL. The center helps residents of rural communities with education and training in farm safety. For more information, call 217-383-4606.
Taking a look now at what's been happening at the Chicago Board of Trade on this Monday afternoon, and we'll catch those numbers very shortly. And they finish the day like this in Chicago. Nearby wheat futures finished the contract at $4.55 in the May. They were down 5.75 today. July futures at $4.70 were down 4 cents. And July of next year, July futures were down this year at $4.70. They were down 4. Corn futures May contract at $3.98, a penny and a half lower for the day. July at $4.10, down 3/4. September's at $4.07, finished down 3.25. And December corn futures at $4.06 were off 3 cents for the day. May soybeans, $7.59.5. They were up 6. July at $7.75.25, up 6.25. And the August futures at $7.80.25 were up 4.75. November's 9.5 cents higher at 8.03. Bean meal futures May contract 219.50, up 150 for the day. May bean oil futures at 30.99. They were up 22. Feeder cattle futures nearby March contract over at the Mercantile Exchange, 105.12.5. They were 30 cents higher. April live cattle 97.80, up 70 cents. And June contract at 94.85. That was 57.5 cents higher. April lean hogs at 64.37.5. We're 2.5 cents higher. Taking a look at what the weather forecast looks like from our own Scott Olthoff for the two-state region. He says tonight, partly cloudy skies. Lows will range from 23 in the north to 45 in the far south. Tomorrow, partly to mostly sunny. Highs will range from 42 near the Chicago lakefront to 58 in the south. Tomorrow, the extended forecast says spring will arrive, of course, at 7:07. That's tomorrow night. Spring-like temperatures will be in store for the region for the next 3 to 7 days. A very warm and stormy weather pattern will develop on Wednesday, and that'll last through at least early next week with nearly a day-to-day chance of showers and thunderstorms. Several rounds of severe weather will move across the Midwest and the Plains during that 3 to 7 day period.
Agricultural information is made possible with support from ADM, helping to create a storehouse of possibilities and products from a single seed. ADM, resourceful by nature.
In agricultural news, the Des Moines Register over the weekend reported it will not be anytime soon that ethanol producers will be turning to switchgrass as a feedstock. Iowa farmers participating in a pilot program have found it costs about $60 a ton to seed, harvest, and bale switchgrass. It costs another $25 a ton for storage and transportation. Farmers participating in the program say they will need an additional $30 to $40 in profit per ton to switch to switchgrass from corn. Also on pilot acres, switchgrass yields averaged about 3 tons per acre, well below the 8 to 12 tons the U.S. Energy Department says is necessary to sustain an ethanol plant. The U.S. Senate Budget Committee approved a budget blueprint that calls for $1.6 billion in spending on the Department of Energy's Energy Efficiency and Renewable Energy Program. Committee Chairman Kent Conrad says the $2.9 trillion budget boosts funding in three areas.
Children's health care, education, and veterans. So I think it's a budget that's very much in line with the nation's priorities. I think the most important things about this budget are that it balances by 5 years from now. In fact, we almost balance 4 years from now under the plan I put forward, and we do it without a tax increase. We do it with pretty disciplined spending, somewhat more than the president. We're proud of it.
But the Senate Budget Committee rejected President George Bush's proposed cuts to fossil energy research and development programs and his plan to open the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge to oil and gas leasing. The U.S. and South Korea today are meeting in Seoul. The U.S. began the discussion with South Korea's ban on bone fragments and U.S. beef shipments. A U.S. embassy official says the two sides are discussing market access in South Korea for U.S. agricultural products, as well as quarantine issues. Later this week, the two sides' chief trade negotiators meet in Washington, D.C. to try to finalize a free trade deal. Two U.S. senators have unveiled a bill calling for stricter fuel economy standards, expanded domestic oil and natural gas production, accelerated development of renewable fuels, and greater attention to energy management. North Dakota Democrat Byron Dorgan says a goal is reaching energy independence.
We import 60 to 65% of all the oil that we need. We put straws in the earth and suck oil out of this planet. About 84 million barrels a day, we use one-fourth of it right here in this plot of land called the United States of America. And the fact is our economy, the security of our country, the security of our economy depends on our ability to do better. By doing better, I mean we have to solve this energy problem. Being this dependent on foreign sources of oil, much of it from troubled parts of the world, makes no sense at all.
The legislation is based on recommendations made last December by the Energy Security Leadership Council. The milk income loss contract program faces an uncertain future after the House Appropriations Committee says extension of the program will be made with discretionary rather than mandatory funding. That means the milk program will not be included by the Congressional Budget Office in the baseline for the next farm bill. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey, of course, your Director of Agricultural Programming here at the WILL radio stations. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week, reminding you to visit our website at willag.org, recently reorganized. Should be a little easier for you to load and get things that you want on different pages. It's all right there at willag.org. Well, up next, Iowa's ethanol industry may push more Illinois corn into the export market. We'll hear what Daryl Good has to say. Ethanol production in the Hawkeye State is ramped up quickly. This building demand base in the Western Corn Belt should benefit corn farmers across the Midwest, but in particular those in Illinois, says University of Illinois Extension Ag Economist Daryl Good.
I think that's right. I mean, when you look at the number of ethanol plants that are being constructed and where they are, Illinois is one of the few states that's not going to be deficit in terms of meeting domestic demand for corn. It looks like Nebraska, Iowa, will all be needing more corn for livestock and ethanol production than they're going to produce. So Illinois, I think, will be in a pretty good shape to supply the export market.
Well, how much extra corn that might add up to isn't easy to calculate. There are two reasons for this. A first, when Darrell Good refers to the export market, it means exports out of the state, and there is reason to believe Illinois corn will be shipped west to service the Iowa ethanol plants. That hasn't happened in the past. Secondly, while USDA keeps close track of how many bushels of corn the United States exports, it does not know where those bushels originate. So, Illinois corn is likely to replace Iowa corn on barges headed down the Mississippi River, but Darrell Good doesn't know just what that offset will be.
Well, there is a fair amount of corn that moves out of Iowa to the export, both to the Gulf and from western Iowa to the Pacific. The truth is, we don't have statistics on that. USDA makes export estimates by state, but all they do is prorate total exports by the percentage of production in each state. So it really doesn't tell you anything. You'd have to go back and look at barge loading data and that kind of thing to really ferret out how much is going out of each state. But clearly Iowa has been a large corn exporter.
Illinois won't be the only state vying to pick up Iowa's export market. In fact, it isn't likely to be the first in line to load out corn headed south to the port of New Orleans. Barge line operators say they'll be picking up corn from Cairo to Memphis, and that's not usually corn country. The corn planters are already rolling in the south, and that corn, harvested first this fall, is also likely to be the first to head downstream. Even so, ag economist Darrell Good says the south won't raise enough corn to be a big concern for states like Illinois.
At the margin, it is. It says that that corn that's more tributary to the export market would go first, and if there's more there and it's available earlier, certainly that will find its way into the export channel. The question is magnitude. We're probably not talking tens of millions of acres of corn in the Delta. We're talking maybe a million acres more corn. So that's not going to really swamp the export market. There's still going to be a very large need for Midwest corn.
Illinois corn. Corn shipped from the prairie state to ports around the globe, and this year, most likely in large quantities, west to Iowa. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Joining us on this Monday afternoon to take a look at not only what's been happening at the Chicago Board of Trade and the Mercantile Exchange, but the cash grain market are a pair of our analysts, Kurt Kimmel of Grainfield Marketing, on the line with us this afternoon from his office in Bloomington. Good afternoon to you, Kurt.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Thanks for joining us. And Brian Stark joins us as well from the Andersons here in Champaign County. Hi to you, Brian.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Let's talk to both of you to begin with a little bit. We'll start out with you, Kurt, because I've been gone for a couple of weeks. Tell me what's been happening over those past 2 weeks in the marketplace, Kurt.
Well, we've seen a correction off the highs on corn. We sort of topped out there the first part of the month and been trending lower since then as the trade becomes a little bit more comfortable with the acreage estimates and export demand. Here lately, though, we've seen an unwinding of the bull spreads. The bull spread for, say, long the old crop, short the new crop's gone the other way here. Accelerated a little bit today on ideas maybe some wetter areas might be a little slow getting into the marketplace. So that's been the big feature as corn sort of takes the back seat here for a minute or two. The big uncertainty is acreage, as I mentioned, and especially in the beans. Whereas beans, when you start plugging in smaller acres into the new crop supply-demand balance sheet, it tightens up the bottom line quite a bit. So we're adding a little premium to the bean market versus the corn, Todd.
And, Brian, how has basis reacted over the past couple of weeks as corn fell off those highs?
Well, I'd say the nearby basis, Todd, has firmed quite a bit in corn. It's staying firm. Just to point out, as far as you can see the contradictions, corn firming at the Gulf, we've seen an average basis of 25 over posted today. That's pretty typical average for the year. We're sitting at 16 under the May, which is getting firmer here in the last couple of weeks. One thing to point out, the beans are quite the opposite, and that kind of relates to the record supply we're looking to project into the fall. Down at the Gulf, they're looking at option the nearby month to unders. So you can just see how wide of a carry they're building to the bean market, and they're not really needing beans right now. So the nearby basis of beans has been actually weakening quite a bit.
And then, Kurt, as we take a look at the tech side of the market just a bit, we can see that the 20 and the 50s, we've traded under those, but we're down near that 100-day moving average. Is this going to be a problem sometime this week, do you think?
Well, the overall trend's down, and for those funds that follow the moving averages, such as your 40 and 50-day moving average, they're going to be in the defensive. They're going to be sellers in the up mode in here, especially on corn, sort of a defensive posture until we get back above those moving averages. As far as the bean technicals, they're quite impressive with the November able to move above the $8 benchmark. So actually the bean market found support on their moving averages, whereas the corn's probably going to struggle here for a while.
What are people saying about the March 30 report? You said that they had firmed up. What kind of number in the past 2 weeks have they decided upon?
Well, we're still caught between some wide ranges, per se, but I'd say probably the benchmark on the corn is going to be whether or not we see a 10 million acre increase or not. There's still some below that and still some above that, but 10 million acres sort of be swing point in it. And the beans, still wide variance there, as much as a 5 million acre drop to as much as a 9 million acre drop there, Todd.
And then, Brian, if you could tell me what kind of movement, if any, there's been on either corn or soybeans in the last week and a half?
I would say the movement's been consistent up until we started seeing wet weather that's kind of slowed things down a little bit as we've thawed out here with warmer temperatures in the farm lots, and things have gotten a little bit sloppy. But for the most part, we've seen some consistent movement, although slowing down here in the last couple of weeks.
What have we heard about the wheat market, Brian, in the last couple of weeks?
Well, I think wheat-wise, the big question, at least in the countryside for us, is what's the quality going to be like? A lot of guys have had, looking at it, seen that the wheat doesn't look like it's greening up, and obviously we're still starting to get warm now. But I think support in the wheat market could be determined on how this soft red wheat comes out of its cycle into its normal projection into the summer. And right now, a lot of talk that the quality just isn't good, and there's talk that some of the wheat acres, at least in central Illinois, may be ripped up and go to corn.
And I asked simply because, in part because we do have the soft red winter wheat crop, but of course I just came from a very large wheat country, India, that supplies a great deal of wheat. Most of it, I think, is amber green, hard amber green wheat. But it looked in awfully good condition. The other thing that we heard there, and I don't know whether, Kurt, whether you made note of this somewhere along the line, but that India had decided just as we arrived about the 6th of March to stop futures trade for both wheat and for rice, and that they had their starch users, the poultry and the other industries, claiming that they wanted them to stop futures trade in maize or corn as well. Did that make it back this far to the States? Did you hear that story?
Yeah, there's news of that. And, two, there's news that China is looking at investing more into the paper assets, too. So you've got one going one way and going the other. But the wheat's something to watch here as we go into the spring domestic. More than anything, as mentioned, there is the green up here. If we don't have this wheat come out of dormancy in a time and fashion in a good condition, we're going to see a lot of it torn up and put into corn.
And then can you discuss very quickly the outside markets for me, Kurt?
Yeah, we're seeing some stabilization in the world equity markets. China did go ahead and raise their interest rates slightly, and this is the third small increase. And with the world economy's equity is able to stabilize, it gives the overall market some stability. A lot of eyes are on the energy sector here, whether or not the crude oil could continue to advance above the $60 level. We saw a divergence between the April and the deferred contracts, and that was due to the April going off the board here fairly quickly and rolling the spreads to the deferred contracts.
And finally, Brian, what's the most often question asked of you in the last week from farmers? Are they starting to wrap up their marketing for the time being and looking forward to putting a crop in the ground in the next month, or is there something else?
No, I think the biggest question on their mind is it over? I mean, anytime the market breaks, and you're talking at some pretty significant levels, guys are reluctant to pull the trigger at some point, and then when the market self-corrects itself, like Kurt said, we were off the highs, you know, 30 cents on D's corner, close to it. Guys are reluctant to want to know whether it's over or not so that they can pull the trigger. And I think, you know, for the most part, people have to realize that we're walking a very thin line as far as how many more corn acres we're going to see versus coming up with the demand we need to build on that supply. So until that's answered, we're going to have a volatile trade the rest of summer and into the growing season. So that's the biggest question, and obviously a lot of nervousness on when to pull the trigger and make sales.
And what are your bids for the day?
We are 382 cash corn. Corn, fall 384, cash soybeans 726, and fall 781.
Brian Stark, of course, is with the Andersons in Champaign County. Thanks for joining us, Brian. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Todd.
And Kurt Kimmel is with Grainfield Marketing in Normal, Illinois. Any final word from you, Kurt?
Well, just like Brian mentioned, there's going to be a lot of volatility, so have some type of plan and try to stick to it.
All right, we appreciate you. Thanks much for staying with us, Kurt. Kurt Kimmel of Grainfield Marketing out of Normal, Illinois. Those two guys join us here on the Closing Mark Report. That happens each and every Monday afternoon. In just about 2 minutes, we'll take a complete look at the agricultural weather forecast with the folks at Chesapeake Energy in Chicago. Your regional newscast, that one comes up next.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Tom Rogers. Searchers are using underwater cameras to try to find an 8-year-old boy missing since his grandfather's boat plunged over the spillway at Clinton Lake in DeWitt County. Kaylin Hunter of Normal's been missing since Wednesday when the boat apparently ran out of gas at night and was swept over the spillway into Salt Creek. The bodies of the two other people aboard the boat were found the next day, Kaylin's grandfather, Richard Hunter of Normal, and the boy's uncle, Jason Hunter. Jason Hunter is a Navy sailor stationed in South Carolina who was Richard Hunter's son. A worker has found a body in a utility room of a Purdue University residence hall. A school spokesman says it's too soon to know if the body is that of 19-year-old Wade Steffi, who vanished more than 2 months ago. He was last seen in Owen Hall, where the body was found. The start of fallen media tycoon Conrad Black's racketeering and fraud trial has been postponed for a day over what attorneys describe as a juror problem. U.S. District Judge Amy St. Eve had planned to swear the jury in today and start with the prosecution's opening statement, but after questioning jurors in her chamber, she postponed the start of the trial, first this afternoon and then until tomorrow morning. Black is accused of swindling Hollinger International out of $84 million through a series of asset sales. He's denied wrongdoing. Lawyers have been vague about exactly what the juror problem was. An auction Sunday tied up one of the last loose ends left in the case of a central Illinois judge who looted the estate of a local philanthropist. Buyers agreed to pay more than $1.7 million for 500 acres of farmland, as well as other assets that belonged to former Cumberland County Judge Robert Kochenour. He was sent to prison in 2003 for stealing from the estate of businessman Jay Hayden, who had died in 1985. The former judge was paroled 2 years ago. Kochenour still paid a judicial pension under a deal he cut with prosecutors. Insurance regulators in Mississippi say Bloomington-based State Farm has agreed to re-examine more than 35,000 policyholder claims filed after Hurricane Katrina. Mississippi Insurance Commissioner George Dale says State Farm has agreed to make millions of dollars available for additional payments. I'm Tom Rogers, AM 580 News.
I'm Todd Gleason, AM 580 Agriculture. You're listening to The Information Advantage. This is WILL Urbana. It's a broadcasting service of the College of Communications here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. We're joined on this Monday afternoon by Mark Russo of Chesapeake Energy in Chicago to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast for the Midwest and around the globe. Hi, Mark.
Hello there, Todd.
I just got back from the growing regions of India where the wheat crop appeared to be in really good condition. Do we think that'll hold as they grow through the rest of the season here?
Yeah, we think that the wetness issues that you had back several weeks ago about, you know, too much rain, which we thought was a little bit ludicrous just because they had they needed the rain here to help boost their soil moisture here as they wrapped up their heading stage. It looks like fairly dry weather will prevail now over the next 10 days. So as we wrap up the growing season there and look ahead to harvesting, things look pretty good.
And then if you go to other parts of the globe where they're in the midst of harvest of soybeans, can you tell me about it?
Well, down across Brazil, they continue to have just fabulous weather here for soybean harvesting. We are going to see at least a little bit more of an increase in thunderstorm activity into areas such as, you know, Mato Grosso, but even there, you have almost 75% of the soybeans harvested, which is well ahead of the normal pace for this time of year. And down south in the southern Brazil, they're going to have mostly dry weather here coming up, so as they begin to reap the soybeans overall here, we just don't see any issues, which has really been the trend all season long, just an ideal growing season, and thus big crops coming out of South America.
And if you check in on Australia, how are they doing on the recovery from the recent drought?
They've recovered fairly nicely here throughout their summer season, and now as we look ahead toward the new winter wheat planting season, which really is just around the corner, it's going to be starting up here over the next several months, but we've seen a boost in soil moisture across both the western and eastern section of the country, specifically in the heart of their winter wheat producing areas. So it looks like almost a difference between night and day going into last season, which obviously had the very dry condition which continued throughout the season. But overall here, it seems like a more active pattern that looks to continue into the start of their growing season. So right now, prospects look good.
Spring arrives at 7:07 tomorrow night here in the Midwest, Central Standard Time.
Yeah, overall here, it looks like, from a temperature standpoint, a warm start to spring here as temperatures this week climb up to above normal levels across much of the Midwest and look to stay that way as we go through next week. From a precip pattern standpoint, we see a fairly normal pattern here coming up as really the region of above normal precip will be confined to the plains here. So as we look ahead here to the start of planting, we don't see any kind of significant issues, i.e. anything extremely wet or, for that matter, dry across the Midwest, let alone much of the central and eastern U.S.
We appreciate you being with us.
Well, my pleasure, Todd.
Mark Russo is with Chesapeake Energy in Chicago, Illinois, and that is today's Closing Mark Report for a Monday afternoon. We'll talk to you again tomorrow afternoon at 2:06. And don't forget, you can always tune in to WILL early in the mornings around 8:50 to take a complete look at the overnight trade with Dave Dickey, and then again at 9:50 for the pre-opening market report. You can hear all of those reports on our website at willag.org. That's willag.org. You have a great afternoon. I'm Todd Gleason.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from First Midwest Bank, serving the banking needs of Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Bob Bastifer in Danville at 217-477-6016. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, and equal housing lender.